It's 9 after 7 on Wednesday, June 11th. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. For political junkies, this year has been one high after another. Now that the two major parties have presumptive nominees, the speculation has turned to the selection of running mates. This morning, we're going to spend an hour handicapping the choices, and we'd like to get your input on this as well. Who should the candidates pick? How should they make their choices? And how important is the vice president anyway? Will it make a difference in how you vote in November? You can let us know by calling 800-642-1234 toll-free, or in Madison, call 263-1890. Or you can send an email to the program. The address is talk@wpr.org. My guest this hour is E.J. Dionne Jr., senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, Washington Post syndicated columnist and author of Sold Out, Reclaiming Faith in Politics After the Religious Right. He joins me by phone. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Well, I'm glad you're here, because otherwise this would be an hour of dead air.
No, you've got great callers. They would fill it brilliantly.
Well, you're absolutely right. For a newspaper columnist, this has to be just an incredible year so far.
It really has been an amazing campaign. I mean, on the Democratic side, you have the first African-American nominated for president. Otherwise, you would have had the first woman nominated for president, and you had this fight go on all the way to the end. On the Republican side, you had John McCain essentially declared dead as a candidate who came back to life. The conservative part of the party was in disarray, had no sort of unified candidate, which allowed McCain to sneak through. And you both of these candidates are very interesting human beings, no matter where you stand on them. So that, among other things, all of that and lots more has made this a fascinating race to cover.
Well, now that we have quote-unquote presumptive nominees for president for each of the two parties, the attention focuses on who they will pick to join them on the ticket. How important is that choice these days?
Well, I think the, on the one hand, it's probably the case that a bad pick can hurt you more than a good pick can help you. And even then, it's not clear how important the choice is. I mean, you've had, Spiro Agnew, Richard Nixon's choice back in 1968, was very controversial. The Democrats ran an ad, with the words President Agnew and then laughter. It was not a very friendly ad. Dan Quayle, chosen by the first President Bush, may have cost him a couple of points in the polls, according to a New York Times analysis back then. On the other hand, a good ticket can be helpful, partly because of the signal it sends about the candidate, his ability in this case, both men, his ability to make a decision that works. I think when you look back, what were good tickets? Well, Kennedy Johnson was a smart ticket because Lyndon Johnson helped John Kennedy carry Texas and some other states in the South, and it was surprising because they were seen as rivals who didn't particularly like each other. Advocates of an Obama-Clinton ticket tend to point to that one. The Clinton-Gore ticket was a good ticket for completely different reasons, that the two reinforced each other. Two younger Southern Democrats, symbolizing a new generation and also their intent to contest the South, and they did very well in the South. Reagan-Bush was a good ticket because Bush represented what was left of the old establishment in the Republican Party, whom Ronald Reagan put on his ticket to merge the conservative movement with the old Republican establishment, and that ticket worked well. I'm not sure, out of those good ticket choices, what lessons there are for this time around.
Well, can a vice presidential candidate still balance out a ticket geographically, and does that really matter anymore?
Well, if they can do that, although the Clinton-Gore model went in exactly the opposite direction, sort of reinforcement instead of balance, I think the most practical view is that if a vice presidential candidate can help you carry a state that you might not carry otherwise, that may be the most you can ask of that vice presidential candidate. That's why it was interesting yesterday that Governor Ted Strickland of Ohio, who was prominently mentioned because Ohio could be very, very important in this election, took himself out of consideration as Obama's potential as an Obama running mate. He was pretty on national public radio, it should be noted, he pretty flatly said he didn't want it in a way that went way beyond these the usual statements, no, I don't really want it, but yes, really, I'll take it kind of thing.
Well, maybe he read what Lyndon Johnson said. Lyndon Johnson said, I think a man who runs for vice president is a very foolish man. He wished he hadn't. Who knows? We'll talk about that more. We've got to take a break and tell people in Wisconsin what the weather is going to be like around the state, and then we'll come back. We'll take some phone calls, see who wants to join us, and more conversation about vice presidential nominees, what it all means. We'll maybe try and identify some of the front runners and talk a little bit about the pros and cons. But again, who would you like to see your candidate, whether you are in favor of John McCain or Barack Obama, who would you like to see them pick? Does it matter to you? If you haven't decided who you're voting for yet, will it matter which way you vote in terms of who they pick as a vice presidential nominee? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890 and let us know. The email, talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up a little later on today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After one on Talk of the Nation, political junkie Ken Rudin talks about congressional races, the electoral map, the Veep Stakes, and more. That's after 1 o'clock today on Talk of the Nation here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about vice presidential politics and the decision process that both John McCain and Barack Obama are going through. My guest is E.J. Dionne Jr., senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and a Washington Post syndicated columnist and author of the book Sold Out, Reclaiming Faith and Politics After the Religious Right. We have some audio from each of the candidates on the vice presidential process, the choice, the process they're going through, or what they're looking for. I want to play a cut first from John McCain. Here's John McCain talking about his decision process, I believe.
I think that the first and really major and overwhelming priority is a person who shares my principles, my values, my priorities. As you know, priorities are very important in presidents and could be immediately take my place. That's, I think, the overriding criteria.
John McCain on his criteria for vice president. Here's Barack Obama talking about putting together his team.
We've put together a committee. We are going to be equally deliberative in how we move forward, and we're not going to do it in the press, and we're not going to do it through surrogates. So the next time you hear from me about the vice presidential selection process will be when I have selected a vice president.
So that's Barack Obama talking about the process that he's going to use. E.J. Dionne, the question I have for you is, outside of people who are in the media and people who have talk shows and so forth, do you think the average person cares about the process that the candidates are going to use to choose a vice president?
You know, I was just thinking about that as we were listening to those tapes, and I think the short answer is no. I think that if a choice backfires on a candidate, people pay a lot of attention. When George McGovern picked Tom Eagleton, a distinguished senator who turned out to have had some psychiatric issues earlier on, which did not have any long-term impact, and was forced to dump him from the ticket after saying he was going to stand with him 1,000%. He was 1,000% behind him. That hurt McGovern. But I think this process only hurts when something goes really haywire. And then I think if a choice emerges who generally gets good reviews, that probably helps a little bit in establishing the competence of a candidate. In Senator McCain's case, because of his age, and he has said this himself, I think the choice may be just a little more important, and it puts more of a premium for Senator McCain on picking someone whom folks can look at and say, this is a plausible president of the United States. So I think people basically want somebody that in their gut they say, okay, if something, God forbid, happens to the president and this person takes over, we'll be in reasonably safe hands.
Well, let's talk about John McCain. And there have been a number of names that have been floated as possible vice presidential candidates with John McCain. Charlie Crist, the governor of Florida. What's the word on him?
Well, you know, he's a very popular governor. He is a moderate conservative. He's not a really right-wing conservative, if you will. And Florida is a very important state in this election. I think that his chances went down a bit when Obama became the Democratic nominee because Mrs. Clinton during the primaries was saying, I'm stronger in the battleground states. Well, if there was one state where she clearly was quite a bit stronger than Obama, it was Florida. And I think the reason for that is that that Obama's candidacy has drawn a kind of generational line across the country. Voters under 45 are strongly inclined toward Obama. Voters over 65 are much, much less so. And because Florida is one of our older states, it's I think Crist is less obviously helpful to McCain now than he might have been against Mrs. Clinton.
Another governor and one from our neighboring state of Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty. His name has come up. He's 47 years old. He's done very well for himself in Minnesota. What does he bring to the ticket if he were selected?
Well, he would be the classic candidate who might help you win a state. Minnesota, although it's been fairly consistently Democratic, it has been like Wisconsin, a very, very closely fought state, tipping 10,000-15,000 votes the other way would make a big difference in this race if past is prologue to this election. So that's the first value of him. The second is that he is also a conservative who has been able to govern with the Democrats in Minnesota. So he's got a reputation as a kind of pragmatic conservative. I think he is fairly high at the moment from everything one can gather on the list of potential running mates.
Well, he looks good on television, too.
Yes, exactly. He and, I guess, Tim Kaine were on Fox News this Sunday. Tim Kaine, the governor of Virginia, who is mentioned on the Obama side for the very same reason that Obama is making a very strong play for Virginia. I think he's ahead right now in Virginia, a state that had been voting Republican for years in presidential elections, but has been tipping the other way. So, yes, I think, if you were to handicap this thing, at the moment, he's fairly high on the list. Pawlenty is.
Tim Pawlenty would make the third vice presidential nominee from Minnesota in my lifetime.
Yes, that's right. Humphrey and Mondale.
Yeah. Some other names. Of course, Mike Huckabee's name still comes up as a possible running mate for John McCain. What do you think of that?
Well, Huckabee is one of the most interesting and certainly entertaining people in politics. I mean, he's got a wonderful sense of humor. If McCain really felt he had a problem with evangelical voters in this election, he might choose Huckabee. I think the odds of that are pretty low, partly because economic conservatives don't trust Mike Huckabee, and McCain seems concerned about holding on to the Republican base. I'm not sure that's a good strategy on his part. I think that because of the shift in allegiance in the country, even if you hold the Republican base, you need an awful lot of votes in the middle as a Republican to win this election. But because of that concern, even though Mike Huckabee is very conservative on social issues, I think the concern of economic conservatives might shoot him down.
Well, what do you make of McCain's comments that he's, first of all, looking for somebody who shares his principles? It seems to me sometimes presidential candidates pick someone who might contrast with them in order to broaden their appeal a little bit.
That's the old idea of the balanced ticket, and that with Bush did that, the first President Bush,
Hello.
Did that a little bit for Ronald Reagan. But again, there aren't very many moderate to liberal Republicans left in the party. There are just, that wing of the party has died. A lot of those voters have, a lot of the traditionally moderate to liberal Republican voters have become Democrats.
Can we call that the Rockefeller wing?
Yes, the Rockefeller, Scranton, Romney wing, all those great names of the
I'm
past.
I'm showing my age.
And in fact, when you look electorally, a lot of the The areas that were the traditional source of moderate Republican strength are Democratic. In New England, for example, there is one Republican congressman out of all six New England states, Chris Shays of Connecticut. There used to be a substantial number of Republican congressmen from New England, and you're seeing that in other parts of the country. The Philadelphia suburbs, another place where there were a lot of moderate Republicans, they have moved toward the Democrats, so that wing of the party is almost not there anymore.
What about Haley Barbour, the conservative former Republican National Committee chairman, now the governor of Mississippi?
Well, he's a very appealing character. He's sort of warm and has a sense of humor. But if the Republicans have to fight for Mississippi, it's like the Democrats having to fight for my old home state of Massachusetts. It's not a place they should fight for, although interestingly enough, this year, the Obama folks are talking about making a play for Mississippi on the theory that it has a very large African-American electorate. If Obama could increase turnout in that electorate and just bump up his share of the white vote a little bit, it could become competitive. But I think that's a real long shot.
Wasn't there just and maybe I'm getting this wrong, I think there was a special congressional election in Mississippi
not
too long ago.
Right.
And a Democrat won.
Yeah, so and in fact, this is, I think that no matter what happens in the presidential race, the odds are overwhelming that Democrats are going to gain seats in both the House and the Senate. You've had three special elections in a row in Republican districts where those districts have moved Democratic, first in Illinois in former House Speaker Dennis Hastert, a contest in Louisiana that the Democrats won in a Republican seat, and then a gentleman named Travis Childers, a county official down there, won an even more Republican seat, so that you're seeing a real trend toward the Democrats in the congressional elections, even in very, very safe Republican
districts. Well, do you think there's a chance we'll get some sort of reverse coattails? Usually the head of the party is expected to carry the day, but in this case, could we see some reverse coattails if the Democrats do well in congressional elections? That's going to carry over and help Obama?
Well, reverse coattails is one way to put it. Another way to look at it is that the mood of the country is overwhelmingly Democratic. On polls that ask people which party is best positioned to solve the most important problems of the country, Democrats have advantages of around 20 points. And so McCain is really swimming upstream in this election. On the other hand, the fact that in the national polls he has stayed close to Obama suggests he does have the capacity to run ahead of his party. But in order to win, we're talking now in June. The election's a long way off. But if the circumstances that exist now exist in November, McCain is really going to be swimming against a very strong tide that's running against his party.
We're going to take a break for the news, and then when we come back, we'll take some calls. People have some suggestions they want to make. Here are the numbers if you want to join us. 800-642-1234, toll-free, 263-1890. We're talking with E.J. Dionne and with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:35. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week here on the Ideas Network. Well, this hour we're talking about the selection process that the two candidates for president are using to pick their vice presidential running mates, and speculating on the pluses and minuses of various choices. We've spoken about some candidates that John McCain is said to be considering. I think in this half hour, we've got some people who are on the phone and some emails who are interested in Barack Obama's candidate choices. So we'll switch to that. But my guest is E.J. Dionne Jr., senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and a syndicated columnist for The Washington Post and author of Sold Out, Reclaiming Faith in Politics After the Religious Right, published by Princeton University Press. And he joins us by telephone, and you can too. Here are the numbers, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, 263-1890 if you're calling us from Madison, 263-1890. And, of course, the email address, as always, is talk@wpr.org. And we have an email that I want to get to before we move on here. Jay from Columbus thinks Jim Webb should be the Democratic pick for vice president. He says that Webb has experience as the Secretary of the Navy, and he's not a politician. He's a believer in corporate responsibility, and he's a Southerner. So what do you think of Jim Webb as a vice presidential pick?
You know, Webb has a lot of support out there, particularly among, if you will, the blogging Democrats. The sort of liberal blogs or progressive blogs are very interested in Webb. And he, all the things the emailer said are true. I think the question, one of the questions about Webb is whether he is so independent that it's not clear he would ever be the person to put in a second spot. He's very much his own person, and on the one hand, you want somebody with that kind of strength. On the other hand, you want someone who would stick with the program of a president. I think one of the questions about him is the very independent qualities that make him an appealing figure do not necessarily make him the perfect team-playing vice president. I think that would be the discussion. But I think partly because of that support that he has out there, partly because he's from Virginia, and partly because he's a genuinely interesting person, I think he is very high on the list right now.
I guess I'd be concerned because he's a first-term senator. Now you've got to try and elect somebody else to that seat. You know, you'd have to be a little careful who you pick because you don't want to mess up your majority in the Senate.
Yeah, so I think that's clearly true. I mean, Virginia has a three potential running mates because it's such a crucial state. Governor Kaine is one. Jim Webb is another. There's been talk of Mark Warner, the former governor of Virginia, who's extremely popular, but he's running for the Senate seat, and he is seen as a shoe-in, a pickup for the Democrats in the Senate. And I think that certainly Harry Reid and the Democrats in the Senate don't want to lose Warner as a Senate candidate in that state.
Let's go to the phones, and we'll take a call from Terry in Kimberly, who's been waiting a while. Terry, thanks for your patience. You're on.
Hey, good morning. I got about 3 points real quickly. In 2000, when George Bush was selecting a vice presidential candidate, on one Sunday morning, and this all happened, most of it happened simultaneously, on about you know, dozens of different talk shows, including the national ones, but also local ones, in the local markets around the country, journalists magically used the word gravitas as a requirement for George Bush because he was such a lightweight. Given that Obama is far more so in terms of his actual experience, I'm wondering, number one, I guess, whether or not you will hear that word come back again. And number two, I'm thinking about a description in the paper. I think it was in the Washington Post, I mean. And I'm not sure if it was David Brooks. But anyway, someone described the perfect vice presidential candidate for Barack Obama, and they went through a litany of at least 20 points, I think, that finally described somebody who was actually qualified to be president. And I'm wondering, because there appears to be, you know, a need for the Democrats to be identifying someone who actually has the experience necessary to become the president to actually do the job effectively. So I'm wondering, I guess, on those 2 points, if you see that there isn't, and the third point, I guess, is that I've heard the reference to a puppet master, and somebody basically behind the scenes who is pulling Obama's strings, and maybe that's the person that ultimately will become the maybe they're looking for a person behind the scenes to become the vice presidential candidate to actually do the work of the president. You know, because if you look at Obama's in a written speech, he's fine. But if you take him off the subject of the written speech without a teleprompter, we've seen how many gaffes he's capable of pulling and how inexperienced and naive the man actually is. So I'm wondering about those 3 points of gravitas and David Brooks's description of an actual president, and also, you know, who's behind the scenes, really. I'll take my answers off the air.
Terry, thanks for the call.
Well, thanks for the call. I think I disagree. Well, let me put it positively. I agree with one of those 3 points. The two I disagree with are, number one, Actually, Obama has more experience in government right now than George Bush had when he ran for president. He had been governor of Texas was elected governor of Texas in 1994, so he was in his second term. Obama spent much longer in government. Secondly, there is no puppet master for Barack Obama. I don't know where that comes from. This is a very thoughtful, accomplished man who's put together a very good team, a large team that's worked in this primary. Whether you are for Obama or against him, I don't think puppet master describes anyone who is behind the scenes. Where I agree with the caller is that I think gravitas is a good quality in any vice president because, we were talking about before, this person could become president of the United States. I wrote a column this week saying that Joe Biden should be very high on any list of Obama running mates. And there are a couple of reasons I believe that. One, he's certainly very experienced, and he's very knowledgeable about foreign policy. And I think Obama needs someone who can make a strong case for why withdrawing from Iraq in a responsible way would be better for national security, better for our standing in the world than staying in Iraq indefinitely. And Biden, has been making that case very forcefully. So on balance, I think a kind of tricky, clever vice presidential move is less important than picking someone whom the nominee is comfortable with, can work with, and somebody who could be president of the United States.
Let's take another call. This time we'll go to Stephanie in Madison. Stephanie, go ahead.
Thanks a lot for taking my call. I want to make a very quick riposte to the previous caller in terms of experience. Maybe this person would look back at the experience of people like Abraham Lincoln and compare it to Obama. Obama has a real depth of experience in many areas, and I think it's really unfortunate that people have that perception, but, well, we need to educate. Now, here's what I'd heard as far as vice presidential candidates. First of all, you really want to look, trying to do a political calculus in terms of, geographic areas is really not particularly productive. You want to look at that person's ability to govern, especially behind the scenes, and work, maybe in a sense as a co-president in the best possible sense. I have heard that the Democrats are loath to have somebody from a Congress or Senate run as a VP because we need all the Dems in Congress and the congressional body that we can get. If they were to pick a senator, I would love to see Chris Dodd. But there's talk about governors as possible running mates. I have heard one really interesting possibility, Brian Schweitzer from Montana as one, and also Ted Strickland from Ohio is another possibility. And I'm going to hang up and listen to the response off air, okay? Thanks.
Thanks a lot for the call. Well, Ted Strickland took himself out of the running already, but what about the governor from Montana?
Well, Brian Schweitzer is a fascinating fascinating man who has helped turn a state that had been seen for quite a while as a Republican state into a state that Obama actually thinks he can win in the fall. In fact, it's a state that voted once for Bill Clinton in one of his two elections, so there is a potential to carry that. I don't think Schweitzer is all that high on the list, although he has some real support out in the country. A lot of the folks who like Webb also like Schweitzer as a kind of maverick progressive. But on balance, if I were to guess, I don't think Governor Schweitzer is going to be the running mate. I liked the caller making the Lincoln point. Lincoln, of course, served a very short time in Congress and had very little other public experience. And he also became a national figure because he was an extraordinary orator. He gave, Reagan made his career on a powerful speech he gave for Barry Goldwater in 1964. Obama, of course, did it in 2004 at the Democratic Convention. Lincoln did it with a great speech at Cooper Union, laying out his position on slavery. And even before the days of mass media, the reporting of that speech at Cooper Union really turned Lincoln's fortunes around, or took a potential candidacy and made it into a very strong one.
We're at weather time. We'll take a break and we'll come back with more of our discussion. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 7:48, you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, stay tuned after 8 this morning as my guest and I talk about faith on Sundays in America. It's a book that's just been published and was written by Suzanne Strempik-Shea, Sundays in America. That's our topic after 8 o'clock this morning. We'll take a journey across the country and see what's going on in various churches. This hour, we're talking about politics and specifically the politics of choosing a vice presidential running mate. The two candidates for the two parties have been identified, and now we're kind of handicapping the selection process for vice president. And to help us do that, we have with us E.J. Dionne Jr., senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and a syndicated columnist with the Washington Post, author of the book Sold Out, Reclaiming Faith and Politics After the Religious Right. You can join us by phone, too. There's a line available for you right now if you call quickly at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. In Madison, it's 263-1890, 263-1890. The email address is talk@wpr.org. What about, let's look at some other candidates. And, of course, the elephant in the room here and is Hillary Clinton. There was a lot of speculation just before Mrs. Clinton withdrew or suspended her campaign that there would be some pressure on Barack Obama to select her as his running mate. This was the so-called dream team. What chance do you think that still has of happening?
My own view, and of course, you know, Washington pundits are famed for being wrong, but my own view is that that is highly, highly unlikely. All the signals that come out of the Obama campaign are that he'd rather do this on his own. There is, a lot of talk about what would it be like to govern with Mrs. Clinton as your vice president, having an independent power base. President Clinton would obviously be a powerful force no matter what happened in that administration. I've been joking that you need to build a North Wing and a South Wing in the White House to go with the East Wing and the West Wing. On the other hand, the argument for her is she did get almost 18 million votes. There is a real constituency out there for her. There are, there is a significant number of women who believe that she was the victim of sexism in this campaign, although fortunately for Obama, most of that anger is directed at the media rather than at Obama himself. She did do much better than Obama did among white working class voters, particularly in that Appalachian belt that was went very strongly for her and against Obama. The real debate there is whether an Obama-Clinton ticket would be the aggregation of its strengths or the sum of its weaknesses. If he picked her, would he inherit her enemies to add to his enemies as opposed to winning her friends to add to his friends? As I say, all the sense I get is that that is, at this moment, a highly unlikely choice. But you can call me back when they have their convention and you see the two of them up there smiling together, and I'll try to explain why I'm wrong.
Yeah, I hear you there. Here's a three-rail bank shot. One name that's been floated is Chuck Hagel, the Republican senator from Nebraska.
I think that's actually serious talk. I think that there is interest in on the Obama side of putting a sort of strong backing to his constant refrain about governing in a bipartisan way. Hagel certainly has very similar views on the war in Iraq and foreign policy more generally to those of Obama. Hagel, on economic issues, is very, very conservative, and I think a principled conservative. I don't think these are views he puts on. And it may just be a little too conservative for the Democratic Party. I think the same might be true, even though he's a Democrat, of Sam Nunn, whose name has also been floated as a potential nominee. So again, if I were to guess, I would guess not for Hagel, but I do think that talk is serious. I think that is a possibility.
There's a letter to the editor in today's USA Today, that's redundant, saying that Hillary Clinton would make a good vice presidential candidate for John McCain. What do you think about that?
That sure would be interesting. It would be a clever choice, although it would sure put a lot of Republicans who can't stand the Clintons in a very difficult position when they walked into the voting booth. I don't think she would do that.
I think they'd have to resurrect P.T. Barnum as their campaign manager.
But P.T. Barnum was very successful, it should be said. There's one fact about that, that there's one point that operates in favor of that, even though I don't think that will ever happen, which is that McCain and Mrs. Clinton are friends. They've spent a lot of time together. They both share an interest in military issues. They've traveled to Iraq together a lot. So I think there is a certain personal bond between them. But again, I don't think that'll happen either, and I'm even less likely to have to apologize for saying that come the convention time.
Let's take another call. We'll go to Ryan in St. Germain this time. Ryan, good morning.
Good morning. I was thinking while I was listening on the phone here about a possible two choices for Barack Obama, and I'd like to get the guest's opinion on. One is one that's been a name that's been floated around that I've heard on various news programs for the last, about month and a half, and that's Evan Bayh from Indiana. And another one, which I've just heard in the last couple days, which is definitely a sexier pick, but perhaps a riskier one, is Caroline Kennedy. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
The second is a fascinating choice. I mean, she is a beloved person. I think anyone who's over a certain age has just incredibly warm feelings for her as someone who, they remember her at the moment that President Kennedy was shot. She's led an exemplary life for someone, for someone who's a celebrity. It's remarkable what a sort of straight-up exemplary life she's lived. I just don't think that's going to happen. Bayh, I think, is very much on the list. He's a Clinton supporter. He could put Indiana in play. Obama's very interested in broadening the map. He's very smart on national security. Again, just a gut instinct. I don't think that is going to happen, but I think it's an interesting choice. If I can throw one other name on the list, courtesy of the New York Times this morning, there's a report that General James L. Jones, retired former commandant of the Marines and also the Supreme Commander of NATO, is on Obama's list. I've met him. He's a very smart man. I think there is talk of a military choice for Obama to counter, in a sense, John McCain's heroic.
Yeah, Wesley Clark's name has also been thrown out there as well for the same reason.
Wesley Clark, you said?
His name's come up. Hey, let's hear from David in Chippewa Falls next. David, good morning.
Good morning. I know we're almost out of time, so just quickly, I'm kind of curious as to your thoughts about Governor Palin for a running mate with Senator McCain. Governor Palin from Alaska?
Again, Alaska is one of those states where if a Republican has to fight for it, he's in trouble. There is some evidence that Alaska could come into play because of Senator Stevens and some scandals up there are pushing the state a little bit more Democratic. But, boy, that one would surprise me. But it's an intriguing suggestion. I love the hearty good morning you gave us. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David, for that. Let's go next to a quick call from Tom in Green Bay. Tom, good morning. We're almost out of time, so please be brief.
Brief. My suggestion would be probably Richardson from Governor Richardson from New Mexico, because he'd bring in the Latinos from California, Texas, and the Puerto Ricans possibly from Florida and possibly Arizona.
I think that's a name that's very much on the list. The Rocky Mountain states are a real target for Obama. Richardson would combine the fact that he's Latino and Obama has been relatively weak for a Democrat among Latinos. He's ahead of McCain, but not by the margin he would like. And he's got all that foreign policy experience. So I think that Richardson's name is definitely high on this list.
The timing of the announcement of who the running mate is going to be, how does that play into all of this selection process?
The tradition is to wait till the convention and to have lots of speculation and to have it be a great moment. I've wondered for a while why all this drama is such a good idea, and that if a candidate decides on the running mate, why not announce them much earlier? I think the one advantage of waiting to the convention is that by the end of August or the beginning of September, these two candidates will have a clearer idea than they do now of what their needs are, what their weaknesses are, what kind of running mate might shore them up in places they need shoring up. But, you know, I'm also one of those who thinks that it would be nice if candidates announce the top members of their administration before the election, you know, at least the Secretary of State's Treasury and Attorney General, so that voters could have a better idea of how they might govern, who would govern with them. But again, that hasn't happened yet historically. I'd love to see it happen sometime.
Well, we're out of time, so we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Yes, it's great to be with you and your audience always. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. E.J. Dionne, Jr., Senior Fellow at the Brookings Institution and a syndicated columnist at The Washington Post. This program was produced by Karen Prager, and she also did on-air production. Thank you, Karen. Cynthia Schuster helped out as well. If you'd like to hear the program again, you can go to our website, wpr.org, and listen to it. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.